Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
Well, welcome to Focus Today. I'm your host, Perry Atkinson, and wow, what an honor to have back with us today Alan Dershowitz, one of America's most respected legal scholars, criminal lawyer, Harvard professor emeritus, host of the Dershow podcast, which is a must listen to. He's also the author of numerous best-selling books, including Get Trump, The Threat to Civil Liberties, Due Process, and Our Constitutional Rule of Law, and his latest book entitled War Against the Jews, How to End Hamas Barbarism. By the way, there's a picture of the cover of that book on the screen. It is a must-read, and check it out online. Professor, good to see you again, friend. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
When do you sleep?
I sleep very well.
Gosh.
I just work very hard. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your efforts and your work. So much to talk to you about quickly. The left is using everything they can through the judicial system to get former President Trump. Is it working?
No, it's not working. It's going to backfire. The case against Trump in New York is a joke. It's worse than a joke. It's a kind of Stalinist abuse of the legal system. Show me the man and I'll find you the crime. But I can't find the crime. I've been doing this for 60 years. I've been teaching 10,000 students, litigating 250 criminal appeals, writing probably 1,000 articles about the criminal justice system. I cannot find the crime. And if I can't find the crime, how do you expect the defendant to know what he's charged with? The case in New York, they're putting on evidence of a guy named Pecker who claims that there was catch and kill, which is perfectly legal. They're putting on a woman who said she was given a non-disclosure agreement, hush money, that's legal. So far, we have no idea what the crime is. The best we can figure out is that he's being charged with a misdemeanor for failing to accurately disclose the source of payments that somebody else made to somebody else, which has been expired statute of limitations by 3 or 4 years. And somehow that expired statute of limitations case has been resurrected because in his mind, the reason he committed that expired misdemeanor is in order to commit another crime, a federal crime, which the federal government never prosecuted. So I just can't figure it out. Nobody I know can, except CNN. CNN thinks this is the most serious crime since the assassination of Abraham Lincoln on videotape. And CNN and C, which you just comes to their legal analysts, no responsible person thinks there is a crime here that should have been prosecuted.
Everybody that seems to be commenting on this case, especially you have the highest voice here, understands exactly what you're saying. Do you think the jury can get it?
No, I don't. I think the jury is comprised of a pool, 85% of whom hate Donald Trump and don't want him to be president. And some of them will do anything to stop him from being president. And they're watching the polls and they see that a conviction before the election might influence 15 or 20% of independent voters, even if the conviction is ultimately reversed on appeal, which it will be, because the Court of Appeals in Albany in New York just reversed the Harvey Weinstein conviction on precisely the same grounds. That is, in the Harvey Weinstein case, they introduced evidence of other women who he was not charged with having any kind of sexual relation. And that muddied the waters, and the court reversed it. And that's what's happening here. They're introducing all kinds of irrelevant evidence about catch and kill and about hush payments that are clearly designed to try to prejudice the jury into thinking, this is not a good guy. Let's find something to convict him on. And I think a court of appeals would very much look very askance at the way this case is being tried.
So what happens between a conviction and a court of appeals? Does he do some jail time? Does he immediately go to appeal? Does he go home and have a chocolate sundae? What's going on here?
In the normal course of events, the appeal would take 6 or 8 months, sometimes even longer. I've done many of them in the New York system. But in this case, because he rushed it to trial, his lawyers would seek an expedited appeal and try to get the case heard by the appellate courts within a couple of months before the election so that there could be a reversal. And it would be hard for the court to turn him down on that since they rushed the trial. Why can't they rush the appeal? And I think he'd prevail on that issue.
What prompted you to write Get Trump? I mean, the case is subsequent to that. What's going on in your mind?
Well, a lot of these cases were being planned prior to that. Look, I'm not a Trump political supporter. I voted for Biden. I'm a liberal Democrat. I have been since I voted for John Kennedy in 1960. But I care much more about the Constitution, the rule of law, and our legal system than I do about partisan politics. And I know an injustice when I see it. And this is a terrible, terrible injustice going after Trump in this way. If his name weren't Donald Trump and he weren't running for president, he wouldn't be charged with any of these crimes. Take the possession of classified material. So did President Biden possess classified material, and he's not being prosecuted. You know, you have to have a single standard of justice, and Get Trump is an attack on the double standard of justice that we're seeing being directed by both state and federal prosecutors against a very, very controversial and, in the mind of many, a dangerous candidate for president. But that decision should be made by the public. And we who will vote, anybody who wants to vote for him should be allowed to vote for him. People who want to vote against him should be allowed to vote against him without the thumb, or in this case, the elbow, of a partisan weaponized criminal justice system being on the scale.
Is the justice system mortally wounded?
Seriously wounded. It's seriously wounded. And I worry that if Trump gets elected, he will try to take revenge and tit for tat. We see that already. We see the Republicans try to impeach Mayorkas. It was an absurd impeachment. He didn't commit high crimes and misdemeanors any more than Trump did. So we see both sides hypocritically trying to weaponize the, in one case, the constitutional system, in the other case, the criminal system. And the losers of the American public is if they can go after Trump, Mayorkas, and people like that today, they can go after you tomorrow. So every American should be concerned about the weaponization, the partisan misuse of our justice system.
I want to swing your attention over to the arguments this past week on the immunity case before the Supreme Court. The audio was made available live. We listened to some of that. Yeah. What was your 30,000-foot view of that?
Well, I don't have a 30,000-foot. I have a 1,000-foot view. I'm very close to a lot of these issues. Trump's lawyer made two very serious mistakes, which I don't understand. I've argued 250 appeals. I know a little bit about appeals. You don't waive rebuttal. The Chief Justice said to Trump's lawyer, all right, you now have time to answer all the arguments made by the other side. No, I think I've done enough. I'm going to sit down. Really dumb. Inexcusable. And then he conceded far too much. He said, well, yeah, there are some private issues that he could be indicted for. And then he gave a list of some of the private issues, which seemed to me to be at least complex and interrelated with public issues. So I think Trump's lawyer did not do a good job on the case. I'm not sure the lawyer for the prosecution did a great job either. The justices were the stars. They asked the hard questions, and I think they will split the baby. They will give him some immunity, but not nearly all the immunity he wanted, primarily because his lawyer conceded that he's not entitled to immunity on issues which appear to many people to be mixed issues of private and public.
Isn't the bottom line of that case the January 6th event and his comments there? I mean, the defense, the prosecution had this idea that he is guilty of insurrection, presupposed it when he hasn't been convicted of it. So in the meantime, the defense, it didn't sound like they took advantage of that.
No, I don't think they did. And I think there's a lot of negotiation going on now. In the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice would love to have a unanimous decision, which says basically, look, both sides argued too broadly. We're not going to agree with the prosecution that says there's no immunity. We're not going to agree with the original position of the defense that says total immunity. We're going to go with that concession. We're going to remand it back to the trial court to have a determination of which aspects of the indictment are private, which aspects of the indictment are public, which is subject to immunity, and which is subject to not. That's my prediction as to how it's going to come out.
In the meantime, Justice Clarence Thomas indicated something that some people have been concerned about as to whether or not Jack Smith has been legitimately appointed as a special prosecutor. What do you think?
Well, that isn't before the court, so the court's not going to decide that issue. What Thomas was doing was inviting the Trump team to raise that issue and bring it to the attention of the court. There is a plausible argument that he's not a legitimate prosecutor under the separation of powers under the Constitution, which, you know, gives authority to the Justice Department to bring these kinds of cases. But, you know, the issue of special counsel, special prosecutor, has been litigated now for, 30 years, and eventually will be entitled to a definitive resolution.
What's your professor point of view of presidential immunity? How would you describe it?
I think it's essential that there be presidential immunity that extends beyond the term of the president into his post-presidential era when it involves official acts. I mean, for example, if, president orders the shooting down of Iranian missiles that are coming into Israel, and one of the missiles accidentally falls on a home and kills people, obviously a president can't be prosecuted for that or for doing what President Biden did, ordering the shooting and killing of an American citizen. When it comes to purely private things, there's no immunity. But what we have here is some act, like calling the Secretary of State of Georgia, are a mixed bundle, hard to separate out the private from the public. I remember when Jimmy Carter was president, and I asked him if he would sign an ad in the New York Times calling for the release of then-imprisoned Anatoly Sharansky. And I said, you know, you can do it as a private person. And here are his exact words. A president of the United States is not a private person, and anything he does is a public act. That's what Jimmy Carter said through his chief assistant back in the day. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. When you're president, you're a public figure in all aspects of your life. That doesn't mean you're a public figure if you do what Clinton is alleged to have done in the White House with an intern. That's purely private. But anything that partakes of government action should be presumptively deemed public and subject to immunity.
A couple of other cases still hang over the former president's head. One is Fulton County, and the other one is the classified information at Mar-a-Lago. Sure. What's your take now of Fulton County? Where is that going to go?
Well, I think there ought to be imprisonment in that case, but not of Donald Trump, of Fannie Willis and her former boyfriend. They committed the most obvious, in my opinion at least, perjury in front of a court by denying that their relationship began before she appointed him and that she paid him back every penny. And I think it's an illegitimate prosecution based on who is doing the prosecution. The classified paper case is a strong case on its facts because he did waive, that is, Trump did waive, a piece of paper that he said was classified and that he could have declassified it and didn't. The problem is it's not a smoking gun, it's a smoking cigarette butt. It's such a minor offense, something that probably every president in modern history is guilty of. And you can't have selective prosecution only of this president for something that Joe Biden and others did as well.
Thank you. Thank you for your update on all that. Let me take a break. We come back. I really want to get to the heart of your new book, The War Against the Jews. I know that's personal to you in many ways and to all of us. By the way, there is a picture of the cover of the book, The War Against the Jews, there by Alan Dershowitz. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
We'll be back to this week's interview in just a few seconds. In the meantime, we want to let you know that you can watch this interview, plus many more exclusive interviews that happen this week on the Dove's Daily TV and radio show by visiting our website, thedove.us. And while you're there, sign up for our free daily devotional, The Word for You Today. 3 months of daily readings that will connect you with God's Word. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. week, and what an incredible honor to have back with us today Alan Dershowitz, which is, he's certainly one of America's most respected legal scholars, criminal lawyer, Harvard professor emeritus, and he has this podcast called The Dersh Show Podcast. He's the author of quite a few books, Get Trump, you may want to check that one out, and I want to talk to him today about his latest book, War Against the Jews, and how to end Hamas barbarianism. There is a picture of the cover of the book on the screen. Professor, the world has changed since October 7th when Hamas innocently attacked Israelis. And here we are several months later, and it seems like that toxic poison has spilled over into campuses in America. We're watching something that we haven't seen since the Vietnam era, and yet this one is certainly different. I know it's personal, and it should be. What's your take?
Happening today is what happened in the 1970s. I represented protesters in the 1970s who were legitimately protesting against the Vietnam War, but what happened to some of them? Some of them, like Kathy Boudin and Bernadette Dorn and a few others, turned from protesters into terrorists. In Kathy Boudin's case, she was convicted of murdering two police officers in Rockland County, and I think two Brinks guards. And then what happened after she served her term? She was hired to teach students, guess where? At Columbia University. She may very well have taught some of the thugs that are now calling for death to the Jews and to praising Hamas. So what I worry about is some of these protesters, particularly the outside agitators, but even some of the students, may be groomed by Hamas and may be recruited, because Hamas is coming to this country. There's no doubt about it. They're already in Europe. And if they come to this country and start getting some of these protesters and saying, look, you said you were Hamas. Show us you were Hamas. Plant a couple of bombs in your university library. Plant bombs in a synagogue. Plant bombs in a library. That's what happened in the 1960s and 70s when some of these protesters planted bombs at the University of Wisconsin, tried to blow up Fort Dix, an American Army base, tried to blow up recruitment centers, and they turned into murderers. And so I worry we have a fifth column in our midst, and they are protesting in front of university campuses. What I want to see is I want the identification and the names of every single student who was calling for death to the Jews, who was praising Hamas, who was saying we'll see 10,000 October 7th. I want their names publicized. They may have a right under the First Amendment to say some of those things, not all of them, but some of them. But we have a right to know who they are. The marketplace of ideas must be open in every direction. And the best response to this is publicity. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. Make them take the masks off. Make them identify themselves. Make them show their Columbia IDs. And so that we, the people who are allegedly victimized by this, who they want to kill, who they are saying to the Hamas killers, these should be your next targets, we should have the right to defend ourselves against them by knowing their names. And I hope we will get to know their names, and I will publicize every one of their names on my podcast and in my columns, because they have no right to anonymity when they're calling for such horrible things against the Jews and against the nation state of the Jewish people.
Why hasn't the universities themselves stepped in and stopped this?
Because they're a bunch of cowards who are running universities. I have a friend who was the president of a major university for many, many years. And he said, the one criteria you don't have for being the president of a university is courage. These are such cowardly people. They want to be good to everybody. They can't distinguish between people who are calling for death to the Jews and people who are calling for a defense of the nation state of the Jewish people. And they have to. There's no distinction under the First Amendment, but there is a distinction in terms of university leadership. Just put the shoe on the other foot. Imagine if they were, instead of anti-Israel protesters, they were anti-Black or anti-gay Ku Klux Klan members calling for death to Blacks for raping of gays. Can you imagine any president remaining neutral on that? No. They would use their bully pulpit to attack these bigots and these racists. And an anti-Israel, anti-Jewish racist and bigot is no better than an anti-Black bigot. These are Hitler youth. These are young people of the kind that brought Hitler to power in the 1930s, that brought Stalin to power, that brought Castro to power, that brought Pol Pot to power, that brought Mao Zedong to power, just because they're kids doesn't mean they're not dangerous. They may be stupid and they may be useful idiots, but they're extremely dangerous, and we have to take them seriously because some of them will become a fifth column, and the targets will not be only Jews. As Elie Wiesel once said, it always starts with the Jews, it never ends with the Jews. So it's coming to a theater near you, and every American should be concerned about the permissiveness that we're seeing by university administrations toward many of these demonstrations that are not protected by the First Amendment. Trespassing is not protected by the First Amendment. Pushing and shoving and hitting somebody in the eye with a Palestinian flag, those are not First Amendment protected forms of expression.
Why is Jews, Israelis, the one exception to CRT?
Well, it's amazing that the whole intersectionality movement is based on exclusion of Jews. They say diversity, but they mean only diversity of skin color. And even there, it's not. If you have a dark-skinned Sephardic Jew, not included. And equity, the concept of equity is the opposite of equality. It's the opposite of Martin Luther King's dream. It says that people should be judged not on their accomplishments, not on their individual qualifications, but on what race, what gender, what religion they belong to. And so it's DEI that has been a major source of the anti-Semitism, along with intersectionality and critical race theory.
My concern about this, many, but with what's going on the college campus is nothing more than raising the noise level while the railroad cars are heading off to the death camps.
Well, there'll never be death camps again because Israel is a strong army and it will never permit what happened in the 1930s. What happened in the 1930s and 40s happened because Jews were weak. And today, Jews have a nation state called Israel with a very strong army and nuclear weapons. So we're not going to see a repeat of the 1940s, but a repeat of the 1930s, where students at German universities and at Russian universities were excluded by quotas, by discrimination, not allowed to come to class. There are pictures of Nazi students blocking Jewish students from coming to class. That's exactly what's happening today. And no university should cancel its graduation. No university should cancel its classes. There should be armed guards like there was in Alabama and Mississippi, escorting Jewish students to their classes and protecting them and making sure that these thugs don't deny Jewish kids and other kids their right to complete their college education. Students should not capitulate to them, and universities should not capitulate to these students.
The current administration, Professor, is saying our relationship with Israel is ironclad, but turns around and puts a lot of pressure for surrender. How do you balance that as a Jew?
Well, as an American, I care deeply about what this administration is doing. It's not supporting its strongest ally. It's sending a terrible message to other allies that in times of crisis, political considerations will dominate. President Biden, who I've known for 40 years, seems more concerned about winning a few hundred thousand votes in Michigan from Muslims and Arabs, who will never be satisfied until Israel is abolished and the Jews thrown out of the Middle East. He seems more concerned about that than he does about what this is doing to America. And I think he should stand up. He should go to Colombia, and so should Donald Trump. And there should be a bipartisan attack on the anti-Semitism that we're seeing on American campuses.
In the meantime, Iran flexed its muscle, threw a bunch of missiles towards Israel, and, of course, a cooperation of nations knocked 99.9% of those down. Israel did retaliate a little bit. Are you surprised that didn't escalate further?
I think, ultimately, Israel and the United States have to make sure that Iran does not develop a nuclear arsenal. Can you imagine Iran, which is more dangerous than North Korea, having nuclear weapons and being able to send out the terrorists under the umbrella of nuclear weapons? So I think that Israel, either with or without the help of the United States, should be allowed to destroy the nuclear armaments that Iran is seeking to build. And the only thing America has to do in that regard is to give Israel, or sell Israel, bunker-busting bombs that can penetrate hundreds of yards below the ground where Iran is developing its nuclear arsenal that will endanger not only Israel, but all of America's allies, and ultimately maybe even America.
What do you want people to get from your book, The War Against Jews?
That it's a war against everybody. I wish I had entitled the book The War Against the Decency, The War Against Civilization, because, again, the Jews are the first, but they're never the last. And so, war against the Jews, and imagine that they're the Jews in this situation, because it never stops with them. And what we're seeing on college campuses today encourages Hamas, encourages anti-Semitism, encourages some of the worst aspects, and they are our future. Because these useful idiots that are parading today, they have no idea what river, what sea they're talking about. They don't know the difference between Palestinians and the Palisades, but they're useful idiots. And they are turning Hamas's barbarism into a victory for Hamas. You know, if I were a Hamas leader, I'd say, wow, October 7th was a great success. Look what we accomplished on college campuses today. Let's do it again and again and again. Let's expand it. Why just limit it to Israel? Why not bring it to America? Why not bring it to Great Britain and France? Look how successful it's been. We'll get college students all over the world to support us if we just kill more people. That's the message that these college protests are sending to Hamas, whether it's intended or not. That's the effect. The effect is that Hamas...
Well said. One last question. Do you think... Jews around the world now are coming together in solidarity?
No. I would say 80 to 90% of Jews are, but then there's this Jewish Voice for Peace, which is anti-Semitic, even though it's called Jewish. It's anti-American. It's really a group of radical anarchists who used to be called communists. So you get Jews. You get Peter Beinhart, who's on the board of the Rockefeller Fund, which is funding some of these horrible anti-American. Remember, death to America is a common slogan of these things. And the Rockefeller Foundation and George Soros are funding these things. So I think we're in for a more serious problem. And this is our future. That's why it's so dangerous, because these kids that are today in tents, tomorrow are going to be running for Congress. One of the people already, one of the people who says he doesn't think Jews should be able to live, said his goal is to run for Congress, and he'll join the squad and be part of the Ilhan Omara and AOC group. And so we have to worry about our future. It's not just now, and it's not just Jews. It's the future of America that's at stake.
The book is entitled War Against the Jews and How to End Hamas Barbarianism. There it is right there. Check that out. Alan Dershowitz. He does have a website, alan-dershowitz.com. And you can check out his podcast, The Dershow Podcast. Check that out as well. Professor, thank you. You always give us time. We value it greatly. Please know that you're in our thoughts and prayers. What an incredible time. And stay in the fight, buddy.
I fight, and I appreciate you having me. I always enjoy your questions.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.